Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Actuarial Adaptability, Unlocking New Paths Mid-Career. I'm your host, Kirsten. It feels like the job market for actuaries is a little tough at the moment, with recent redundancies and seemingly less new jobs being created. As a result, you may find yourself facing a career transition, and that might include moving to a different practice area. Joining me today are three actuaries who've successfully changed practice areas: Aidan, Teresa, and Mike. The three of them will start by introducing themselves and talking about their career journeys to date. We'll then move to Q&A. I've got some pre-prepared questions, but we'd also love to take questions from the audience. We do have a mic here if you'd like to direct it in person, which is always great, but you can also submit it through the app. So please go to the Q&A icon on the Summit HQ app. The link to download can be found on your name tag. When you listen to Aidan, Teresa, and Mike speak today about their career journeys, you might think that some of their transitions feel a bit like being in the right place at the right time. But I really want to encourage you to think about, while you can't control the right time, there is a lot you can do to make sure you're in the right place when that right time comes along. The aim of today's session is to inspire you, provide some practical advice, and give you the confidence that your skills are adaptable and still in high demand. I'm going to pass over to Aidan to get us started.
Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thanks, Kirsten, for the introduction. I was really happy to, well, a bit taken aback, to be honest, to be invited to join a panel discussion about mid-career. I was sort of, my honest reaction was sort of thinking, oh, when I was in my 20s, the reaction I should give to this is probably not the reaction that I asked someone that they're middle age when they're in their early 30s. But I guess the way that I interpret it is mid-career is right here, right now. Everyone's coming from somewhere and everyone's going somewhere forward. So no matter where you are in your career exactly chronologically, I mean, we could be working till we're 80. Who knows, right? So I'll take it with that. It's also great to see such a full room here today, and thank you for attending. So just a little bit about me, my context. Sort of, we start maybe several years ago when I was a consultant at EY, sporting a really great haircut there, you can see, getting a bit extra height. I had just qualified, got my fellowship. I think for all of us as actuaries, that's when we kind of think we've made it, when we've qualified, we've finished learning for life, and then now they've invented lifelong learning, and we go, oh my God, it's just continuing. But I hadn't really thought about what happens next, what happens after that. And I think for a lot of people, they get that sort of called life, well, what next? So for me, and I think a lot of actuaries as well going through university, it's very structured in terms of the degrees and the subjects that you do. You're not able to do exchange as much. Those that do really want to do it are able to do that. And so I needed to take some time to reflect and think about what I really wanted. I think that was really important for me. So what that looked like was taking a 6-month sabbatical. I sort of booked a 1-way plane ticket out to Southeast Asia, to India. An Indian colleague at the lunch table told me how great India was, and I was, I guess, very impressionable and got convinced. So yeah, went off 5 different countries, 6 months, different cultures, different people, different environment, different policies, different processes in terms of how governments work, and sort of laid the seed around how important government policy is to people's lives. After that, I sort of came back and sort of back at EY, sort of figuring out, okay, well, same, but different. I knew I wanted to do something a bit different. I think if you're ever working at a consulting firm, you kind of think, oh, look, in 20 years, do I ever want to one day be a partner? And if not, then why am I still here? So that was that for me. And I had a lot of conversations with a different bunch of people, thinking about how I can pivot to something actually more in public policy. So eventually actually got right place, right time. There was something on LinkedIn and there was something called the Financial Services Royal Commission, which was huge in terms of the impact that had on the industry, but also the wave of regulatory and policy reform that happened from that. So, I don't know, like a fireman, I sort of jumped to the fire, and I think they were desperate to find someone you know, young, who, you know, could work really hard and pick things up really quickly. And so they kind of just like threw me the job and I was like, okay, thank you. But that was sort of my break into policy in life insurance. So I remember sort of going, telling one of my colleagues at EY saying, oh, I'm going to work at a industry peak body, going to be advocating for better policies and standards. And then she just said, oh, so you're going to be a lobbyist. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so. I think one of the transitions moving from, you know, something that's within actuarial practice, dealing with modeling and spreadsheets, but then getting a much more intimate with the law, with policy, with words, with language. You know, it's not just interpreting APRA prudential standards and things like that. That's what we are, you know, trained to do as actuaries, but also understanding some of the nuances in terms of differences between legislation, regulation. So one of the things I did to adapt was, you know, I did take the initiative to apply and sign up and pay with my own money to do a Masters of Business Law to give me that foundation that I needed to have sort of that blend of actuarial but legal training. 2 years in, sort of, I guess, right place, wrong time, the life insurance members I was working for decided to go join and make their own industry association. And so, you know, I was sort of doing policy for life insurance, but we didn't have any life insurance members. So the organization gave me sort of a life raft and said, oh, how about super? Have you thought about retirement? And I thought, oh, that's a long way away. But, and it never really interested me in university learning about retirement. But I mean, I think everyone here knows just how big superannuation is, and it's growing and it's still going to be maturing into the 2040s. And for me, it was like, well, 10 million people have life insurance. How many Australians have superannuation? So it's a chance to make a bigger impact. And it's actually super, you know, exciting and growing. I think, you know, moving into any new area, it's sort of, you have to, you know, I guess, realize that you don't know everything at all. And so that's kind of what I was thinking. I sort of came into superannuation at the start of the Albanese government, and, you know, the thought through my mind was sort of that Simpsons episode where Lisa, the daughter, is thinking about going to college, and she gets really anxious that Marge and Homer, her parents, aren't going to be able to afford to pay for her. So she wakes up Marge in the middle of the night and says, oh, can you afford to, you know, send me to college? And Marge says, oh, but I can take piano, I can do piano lessons. And Lisa goes, oh, but you don't teach piano. And then Marge goes, well, I just have to be one lesson ahead of the student. And so that was kind of my mentality. It was like, look, just be one step ahead. Like, the government has a priority, so you just got to learn that priority and then each step, take it from there. Finally, I guess, brings me to where we are today. There was a role that happened that opened up at the Actuaries Institute, not exactly the role that I'm doing today. And there was a conversation about what does the Institute want and need in terms of public policy. And so, yeah, I guess the whole reason why I sort of stepped out of the actuarial bubble to build up some soft skills, some communication, things like that, was to eventually apply that for the profession to help sort of, because I do believe actuaries have such an important role that they can do, and probably were not courageous enough in terms of public policy. So that's what I've been doing. Today, yep, that's me. I guess I call myself once an actuary, always an actuary. Probably more of a policy wonk these days. Lifelong learner. Jan talked about the podcast series that she was involved in. Now it's been such a pleasure to work with both Jan and Doug on that. So yeah, it's always trying new things, always trying to adapt. My career is probably not as long as the other two, but I'm really happy now to sort of pass over to Teresa, take you through her context.
Yes, well, I'll probably start with not as impressive in my PowerPoint skills. We just went straight to the end with one go. So look, thank you, Aidan, and thank you, Kirsten, for inviting me along today to talk about, you know, share a bit about my career journey. And what I would say is I probably had to actually go back and think about it and think about my journey. And Kirsten touched on it up front around, you know, luck and being in the right place at the right time. And without really thinking about it, if I was to describe it at the outset, I would say I've been pretty lucky and I've organically just grown across roles. But I've got a bit more to share than that. And I think it's as I started unpicking and thinking through, you know, why did my journey take the different twists and turns, and what I might be able to share with all of you today. So I'll go back to university, and you know, my reason for studying actuarial science was less about wanting to be an actuary. I didn't know a single actuary, didn't know what they did, didn't know who they were. But I was drawn towards what I'd be doing. And it was the problem solving, it was the math, it was, you know, that was what attracted me to the degree. And I hadn't ever really thought much beyond that. It was, I'll study this and then I'll figure it out. And what I've realised is that trend of, or that theme of really focusing on what it is I do rather than, you know, what I wanted to be or what the title was or anything like that has probably been consistent throughout each of my career steps and each of the jobs I've taken on. So the first bit of luck for me was landing a life pricing role. When I, during university, we had a work placement. We came out and we, you know, if truth be told, I applied to the big organisations that hired lots of interns, and I got a job with all my mates. And when I went into that, you know, week one, I was really green. I loved that I could do a bit of coding. I got a spreadsheet and I thought it was great. And by week two, I realised being an actuary was so much more than the numbers. And the context of this was I'd never worked in a corporate setting. My parents weren't in corporate. So it was all really new and you know, I was like on this steep learning curve. And the reason I would say it was lucky was really early, being a bit green and a bit naive, I really quickly started seeing the cog in the wheel that we were as pricing actuaries. You know, the link into product, the link into reinsurance, project people. And I was really agnostic to, I was just out in a jaunt pretty much all the time, trying to like figure out who does what and how do we fit in. So I finished my 6 month work placement and went back to uni, graduated and got myself a permanent life pricing role. And it was much of the same, but I, again, similar themes of being out, being in the business, I would describe it. And yes, your ticket to play was your math skills, your problem-solving skills, but really branching out beyond that to go, how do we join dots? How do we connect things? So second bit of luck was I qualified pretty quickly. And what that meant then was I had this opportunity to move into what was a systems and data team in Irish Life at the time. Now, I spent about 6 to 9 months there. And again, it wasn't traditionally actuarial. But without having any precedence, what I observed from that was I worked for an organization that pretty much put actuaries anywhere. You know, this was a systems data team. We were coding products onto green screens. We were, you know, calculating customer remediation. What they seen in the group of actuaries that came through and the grads was, use your deep product knowledge, use your problem-solving skills. You know, they chucked, we were all pretty young, you know, we were all like 21 or like 23, and they chucked us in this team, and everyone just worked together and was basically just problem-solving. So then I decided I'd jump on a bandwagon and follow some of my friends to Australia. And when I arrived over here, I was initially meant to be like a 12-month gap year. Got a job around the corner in PJ O'Brien's, wasn't going to get a real job. But a recruiter reached out and, you know, another piece of luck, landed myself a life pricing role in Astron Life at the time. Now, I spent about 3 years in that team, and gradually, you know, these weren't really like step changes for me. I gradually took on more accountability. I got moved into my first leadership position. But really what I thrived on was this continued networking. You know, I was new in Australia and it was out into the product teams. It was into reinsurance. It was, again, very similar to back in Ireland. But reflecting back and pulling together this, I would say that first transition, which on paper is pricing to pricing, was as difficult as any of my subsequent kind of transitions into other fields, because there was new accounting standards, there was new systems, there was new tools. But by being a bit broad in my remit, and you know, one of the words I would use would be kind of curious as I kind of navigated through, I got one of the, you know, right place, right time, really unexpected opportunities. I'd never imagined at that point moving outside of actuarial. I was pretty, you know, narrow and focused. But I got tapped on the shoulder to take on, at the time, it was 3 months, 3 months secondment into life finance. And what I would say, I was pretty resistant to it. And, you know, I had huge imposter syndrome. I was like, I'm not an accountant. I couldn't possibly manage a team of them. I didn't understand, you know, any of the rules. I didn't understand any of the acronyms. And on reflection, I focused on all the bits I didn't know. But a few people rallied around me and said, you know, give it a crack. It's 3 months. It's November, December, January. You're going to get a break at Christmas. Don't stress about it. So I said yes. And at that point, you know, we talk about sliding doors. We talk about luck. That 3 months secondment, it sort of has resulted now in 10 years or a bit more in finance predominantly and executive leadership. So what happened over the next couple of roles, I would say that there's kind of a running theme where there was no, I can see a few Suncor people in the room, but there was a few restructures that happened and a lot of it was really organic. So I'm not going to be a good person for saying, you know, you have a plan and you stick to it. It was I gradually took on more remit into different roles. I moved into long tail general insurance. Then I took on, you know, an overarching general insurance finance role. And I moved into group, which had a bit of a bank element to it as well. And each of those step changes were at a time when something else moved rather than me proactively going after it. But demonstrating probably before I moved into those that I could do it. And it's, you know, Kirsten touched on it, was around sort of being ready if something came up, demonstrating curiosity, going outside my strict swim lanes, and, you know, being a person that they thought might be able to do it. One other theme probably through there was, I wasn't hugely confident through any of that. What I could see and I reflect now on is the people who were asking me to do these roles probably had more confidence in my ability and the foundations that the actuarial degree gives you than maybe I had appreciated myself, and really drawing on, you know, if they wanted a technical accountant, they would have chosen one. And they were able to see what skills and qualities the actuaries could bring that, you know, wasn't already around their table. So I moved then. There was another unexpected kind of knock on the door. I was on my third maternity leave and I, you know, it was 2021, it was COVID. And I got a call for someone who I'd worked for before, and they'd given me an opportunity to move into risk and operational excellence role. And look, I had really similar thoughts to the first move to finance. I was like, I know nothing about risk. I know nothing about operational excellence. Or so I thought. Now, this GM who I worked for at the time, he was really resolute in his, like he was out telling all my peers or all my prospective peers, no, like the actuaries, this is how they're trained. You know, they're methodical. Risk is in their DNA. So I gave that role a shot, and look, it brings me to where I am today. I'm in a CFO role, and you know, it culminates in all of those roles. There's probably a piece of, you know, being curious, definitely just taking the opportunity, and maybe the third piece is, you know, one of my biggest struggles in any of these moves was being comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, there is so much that you don't know. And it didn't necessarily get easier in any of the roles, but my ability to bounce through it and trust the process and go, okay, here I am again, don't know very much, let's start working through it. And your ability and your confidence that, you know, if you trust that, you've got really good grounding, you can draw on all of your skills to date, it will sort of help you get there. But I will hand over. Thank you.
Well, welcome everyone, and thank you for coming to our session. I think there were six in total, so maybe you just couldn't find a space in one of the other ones, or maybe you're a life actuary sitting here taking notes as to move to your next career. The exact details of my career are probably not that interesting to you, I think what's probably more interesting is if you're thinking, well, I'm an actuary, I know how to, you know, model the future. How do I model which type of work is going to be the most in demand in the future? Which am I going to find the most interesting and, you know, the will pay me the highest salary kind of thing? I mean, my career will certainly is not the most illustrious. There's no CEO positions in any of it, but it certainly was varied. So, I guess the key point about it is it looks a little bit like a travel itinerary. And if you're ever, you know, thinking of doing work in different countries, I'd highly recommend it. So started off in South Africa, as you can probably tell from my accent. I studied there. I did my first job. I had a bursary with a company, and I didn't really think about my career too much. I had to work for them for a certain number of years. I needed to qualify. And it happened to be in superannuation, which, believe it or not, sucked in about 50% of the employment at the time. It was the biggest area of actuarial work, sort of hard to believe now. But eventually, I qualified and immediately wanted to go and work overseas. And my first role overseas was in Singapore. I actually went Johannesburg, Cape Town, Singapore. I'm missing out a few steps just to, not, you know, because in case you guys get bored. But I worked in a consultancy in Southeast Asia. And so the first question is, did I make the right decision? And it's hard to know because you don't know what the counterfactual was, like if I'd gone and worked somewhere else, if I'd stayed in my previous role, you never really can tell, right? But the timing was certainly very interesting. It was right after the Southeast Asia crisis. The company I was working for had a large amount of their business in Indonesia, which one of the talks from yesterday was that the rupiah had dropped by 80%. So that was an interesting time for us. But as you know, as an actuary, if you're working in a certain profession or a certain, you know, like life or general or whatever, you either want that industry to be doing really well or you want it to have a lot of problems. Those are the things that are good for us actuaries. And there were a lot of problems at the time, so that was good for me, I guess. I then wanted to move to Australia, and that was less for career reasons than for personal aspiration reasons. I wanted to emigrate here, and I first moved to Perth, continued working for that same consultancy, and then eventually I moved to Swiss Re. Now, what I was doing in financial in Southeast Asia was very varied. I did a lot of financials. We were doing modeling for distribution channels. We were doing life work, general work, health work. It was the sort of time where the level of skills was quite limited in that area, actually. And if you were a generalist, you could still provide value as a consultancy. I think today that would be impossible. And so when I got my first role at Swiss Re in 2003, it was as a general insurance pricing actuary, and I'd done general insurance work before. And I guess I was a bit lucky that I had done a number of different areas so that when it came time to look for employment, I at least had that, you know, jack of all trades type of thing. So, and was the timing good? I think the timing wasn't bad. It was just after the liability crisis that had happened in Australia. HIH just got bankrupt, one of the biggest bankruptcy in Australia's history. And I think the very first meeting I had with an underwriter was to go and renegotiate a compulsory third party treaty, and we negotiated a 70% increase. So I thought, okay, this is a cushy place to be in as an actuary. Did that for a little while, and then moved into the appointed actuary role in Swiss Re and on the GI side, and did that for a little while, and then a role opened up in Hong Kong, which was both life and general insurance. So it was risk and actuarial management for Asia, and I guess all I had to really do was express a willingness, take my family, up we go to Hong Kong. And what did I find challenging? Not so much the technical side of things, but certainly dealing with, there was a certain culture change to it, and dealing with just an extra group of people. So you had to know the general insurance people in the business and the life insurance people in the business. And depending on your skill sets, you know, I'm not a particularly good networker, not a particularly good, you know, remembering 300 people's names at the same time. That was probably the most challenging part of doing that role. Was the timing good? Was the counterfactual? Should I have stayed in Sydney? That's a very difficult one. I think if you are thinking of moving overseas and then you want to come back again later, On the one hand, you can say to your new employer, look, I've got all this amazing overseas experience, and that does look good on your CV. On the other hand, you lose out on keeping your network in Australia. So you know, you in some ways you can't win, but sometimes you just go, well, was it a good experience? Was it fun? Was it interesting? Did we have a good time as a family? And that's good enough. When I left Sydney, the exchange rate was 5 Hong Kong dollars to the Aussie dollar, and I'd just taken on a mortgage here in Sydney. And within 2 months, the exchange rate went to 8 to the Hong Kong dollar, so it dropped by 60%. So from that perspective, you go, oh, well, you know, I made a bad decision there. And I guess financially, that wasn't the best thing in the world. But, you know, these are the things you can't quite tell. After 3 years, I moved to Zurich. I was working for a company that had its head office in Zurich. So I went to Europe, and that was the first time I'd ever lived anywhere that wasn't, you know, hot all year round. You know, you sort of had snow landing on your house, and you're within 40 minutes of a ski slope. That's kind of, when I think of those 5 years, I think a lot about that. The work was also, that was probably the biggest balance sheets, the biggest teams that I worked with. I was the responsible actuary for a 5 billion franc, you know, composite entity. So that was fun. But at some point was keen to come back to Australia. Was a little bit lucky there that a role came up. Now, I'd been working you know, the life and general, and this was a life-appointed actuary role. So came back, did that for a little while, and then in that time wanted to do a bit of volunteering. Had some with the Actuaries Institute. So I had a choice there between either being on the Disability Income Task Force or doing something in the data analytics side. And as you probably all know, this is a very much a growing area for actuaries and an area we're kind of approaching with a bit of excitement, but with also a bit of intrepidation, right? So I felt sort of on a meta level, you know, sort of looking into new areas and things like that, getting involved in the data science and AI practice committee was a good thing to do. And then just more recently going on to the Actuaries Institute Council, just having worked in superannuation, health, general, and life in through my career, this seemed like a logical place to be. And then just more recently, having spent a long part of my career at one organization, albeit four different countries, or you know, different locations, I moved into a new role, but back on the GI side. So having not really worked in general insurance for more than 10 years, I was able to get a role. Yeah, okay, still appointed actuary type role. So there were a lot of similarities, but you know, having worked in the different areas gave me that scope. So yeah, and the pictures just with the Actuaries Institute, nothing to do with the, you know. Come and do the city to surf with your Actuaries Institute singlet on when August comes around. Yeah, so that's me. I mean, just to leave it with you, none of your careers are going to look exactly like this. Sometimes you'll make decisions and go, oh, you know, if I'd only known that the Hong Kong dollar was going to depreciate by 60%, maybe this wouldn't have been the right thing. But many other, you know, good things from a just an overall interest in family and work perspective. Thank you.
Okay. Now, keeping an eye on time, we've got a little under 15 minutes for questions here. Please, if anyone, we've got one question through the app, but please feel free to send more through. I'm going to ask a couple of pre-prepared questions first, but then I'll call back out to the audience in case anyone wants to get up and speak. I'm going to start with you, Teresa, because you, let's not knock the podium off. You talked a little bit about kind of being apprehensive with some of your changes and thinking that you didn't know what you needed to know. How did you close that gap once you moved into the role? Like, how did you fill the knowledge gaps that you had?
So I think every move, and probably the piece in this is it's not just a move outside of actuarial, it's any move. There's always going to be a fair bit of stuff that you don't know. And I suppose that's the draw towards it. Like everyone in this room, actuaries by nature, we enjoy that learning experience. So what I did was, it was probably multifold. Some of it's, you know, pretty 101, but I did get my hand on pretty much any FCR, any annual report, any investor pack. And the reason for that was, you know, I probably in each role took pace over perfection and tried to skim as much as possible to start joining the dots. So rather than trying to really focus on getting something 100% embedded, it was how do I consume as much information as possible? And, you know, then go back to the bits that are more important. The second piece is leveraging your team and your peer networks. And I would say I was like incredibly fortunate for the generosity of people's time. So throughout all of my roles, there were a lot of people who were so generous to go, oh, hey, do you want this reinsurance treaty? X is really complex. Do you want to talk me through on it? And what I would say was I was quite unashamedly, I accepted every offer of help. When people offered it, you know, I didn't come at it from a, oh my goodness, I'm, you know, in a more senior role now. I must pretend that I know what's happening. I unashamedly, I was respectful of people's time, but I did accept all those offers of help and repaid in a lot of coffee. And the third piece I would say is around as you navigate and in that transition. And I got better with this through transitions, but being kind to yourself that, you know, again, trust the process. You don't need to know it all on day one. Focus on what, you know, people chose you or, you know, accepted you for a role and for what you did bring and trying to bring the balance of in any new role, what you know and what you don't know and trying to bridge that gap. And you don't need to know it all in day one.
And I think we all want to know, are you an accountant now?
I am not an accountant.
Aidan, I'll pass this next one to you. Teresa's talked a little bit about how networking's been quite important to her career progression. How important has it been for you?
It's so important. Everyone here knows how important it is. I mean, to start with a cliche, you know, your network is your net worth. Give you an example, you know, in policy, how you get policy done is through the politics and, you know, say what you like and think what you like about politicians, but they are absolutely the best networkers ever, full stop, right? And they know how to work a room. And, you know, you don't have to be like that. You don't have to be sort of the extroverted person in the conference talking to everyone, but you need to make those moments count. You know, like follow through. I think there's a lot of like good intention. Oh, hey, we should get a coffee. We should catch up, but don't ghost people. You know, it's not like Tinder or anything like that. Actually follow through with that coffee. Connect with them on LinkedIn, say, hey, actually, it was really great to meet you. Really enjoyed that particular part. Let's go get coffee and follow through with that. Less is more. And, you know, if you let that slip, you're not keeping that promise to yourself, but you're also not keeping that promise to the other person.
Mike, I'm going to ask you one of the questions from the audience. What areas of practice have you found most beneficial to your career? So you've done like life, general, you're now kind of in a mutual. Do you have a preference? What's been the best?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So one is like what area you work in and the other is what type of organization you work for. So that's often a big decision. Do you want to work for a corporate? Do you want to work for a consultancy, you know, mutual listed company? I would say consulting is a really good way to learn things fast. I think my learning curve was fastest at the beginning of my career when I was consulting. But it does come down to personal preference. I think, you know, you've got to know your strengths. I mean, if you know that you're not going to be a good consultancy, but you somehow think that that, or a good consultant, but you somehow think that that's the way forward, that's obviously not the logical way to think. So.
Yeah. While you've got the mic, you've talked a little bit about the volunteering work that you've been doing for the Actuaries Institute. How important has that been to your broader career progression? Plug for the Actuaries Institute here. We should all volunteer.
Well, it hasn't quite taken me to the C-suite, but I mean, it is, I think it's very valuable to be looking externally. So sometimes you can get pretty internally focused and you're just looking at your own company, especially for me, who'd been at one company for a long time. That became the universe and you kind of spend your time thinking about other people that you're working with. Whereas you step out and you go to practice committees and you suddenly see a whole new world of other people. And it is good for networking. I mean, you do get to talk to other people in the industry, which is very valuable.
Yeah. Aidan, for you, what role did mentorship play in your career?
Mentorship, we know, like, you know, you take the wisdom, that the next generation before you leaves for you out of generosity. We all want to make the world a better place and leave it better for the next generation. I think, to be honest, the Hollywood depiction of mentorship, you know, whether it's sort of like Emperor Palpatine with Anakin Skywalker, and you think that like, oh yeah, basically the mentor's got this plan, and it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of fate that the mentee ends up the way that the mentor shapes. Or, you know, it's Dumbledore and Harry Potter or something. It's not quite like that at all. You know, like often those sort of things, if you seek it out, probably feels too forced and feels too formal. It's those mental moments, right? And so it's like, if you're working with people who are more experienced, and, you know, you're open to it, you practice humility, you listen to where they share things, you'll pick up a lot and they'll be very generous with their time. So yeah, it's those mental moments with everyone really you interact with. You know, if you really believe that you've got something to learn from everyone, then it helps.
Did you actively seek out mentors or?
I mean, to plug for the Actuaries Institute mentor program, I did participate in that as a mentee, when I came back from my career break. Shout out to Sammy Liu, who was really good in helping me understand, what life would be like as an appointed actuary and helping me understand if that was something that was right for me. I think I maybe got a bit impatient and didn't want to work 15 years to get to there.
Yeah. I'm going to ask one more question from the audience and then we're going to end with a big question. So, Teresa, this one's for you. You spoke about dealing with uncertainty and imposter syndrome. How heavily did you rely on the team underneath you for the subject matter expertise and delivery? Were you ever in a situation where the team wasn't that strong and you couldn't rely on them to kind of prop you up?
So there's a couple of bits in that question. So firstly, when you move into a new discipline, a new team, but again, I draw it back to even if it's within actuarial to another company, you will always rely heavily on your team that's in place. And I would say my mindset in any move was these people know more than I do today. They might not ultimately know more than me in 5 years' time, but at that point in time, really understanding who, you know, what they do, who they are, and what problems we have. So no, like I don't think I've ever been in a position where, you know, the team wasn't good enough or anything like that. But what I have seen is that by moving across, into different roles, you bring a different leadership style. And it's a little bit like the three of us sitting here today, everyone in the room. Everyone's style is different and it has its strengths and weaknesses. And I think I learned really early on, it's the power of diversity of thought. You know, for me, it's not replacing myself with people who are like me. My bosses, you know, they didn't need another technical accountant. They were one. And the power within that on, you know, approaching things differently. And then it's just this continuous. We can see it within the Institute. We can see it within, you know, the actuarial profession more broadly. It's this, everything is moving. You know, what's got us here today won't, you know, bring us to where we want to be tomorrow. So all the teams, you know, every team I've gone into, I feel like I've changed it up. I've done it a little bit differently, but really drawing on, you know, people's strengths that I certainly didn't have, and you know, never would.
Thank you. Okay, so we're not going to have time to get to all the audience questions, so please have a look for our presenters at the lunch break. But I pre-prepared for the difficult question. I guess with the recent industry changes and redundancies, how do you see the role of actuaries evolving, and what's the role of actuaries in Australia? We'll start with Teresa and work down the line.
So I think like actuarial as a profession is continually evolving. I think there's a huge place for actuaries with all the change. You know, Mike has talked to the number of actuaries that supported superannuation, how that's changed. I think we're just in another evolving pace. I think conferences like this keep us all up to date, and maybe the plug is continuous learning, continuous mindset of evolving with it. Don't go against the grain. But huge place for actuaries going forward.
Yeah, I think we've got to trust that the training that we have is very valuable to society, and there's always going to be a stage of continual creative destruction, right? So there'll be areas that we'll become less valuable in, and there'll be other areas that we become more valuable in. So if you look at this century, the number of actuaries in Australia has grown at just above GDP, but by a small amount. And, you know, we now have 5,800, including those who are studying. And we're still finding gainful employment. If you look at certain areas like, you know, like the life insurance industry is one where, you know, that's been the core area where actuaries have worked for ages. But at the moment, there's sort of consolidation. Some of the crises that were happening are kind of, well, they're still happening a little bit, but the business isn't making a lot of money. That's a challenging area. But when you look at that, you say in 20 years' time, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of actuaries still working in life insurance because it is absolutely our core skill set. And there is billions of dollars that go into that industry and a huge need from society. So, and I think even with superannuation, I mean, I think that's another core area. So yes, data science, very important. But even within our core skill set, I think we're going to have a lot of employment opportunities all the way into the future, but just slightly different work as we go along.
Couldn't agree more with Teresa in terms of how important it is, and Mike in terms of taking a long-term view. You know, the Actuaries Institute, for example, so the actuarial profession in Australia is, I think, 127 years old. Yes, it's, you know, we're over 100. That's old. But if you take an even longer-term view, it's so young. Like, you know, we talk about Australia here, 250, you know, don't quote me, 200, something like that. You know, we're still such a young country. There's so much potential. You know, if we really consider ourselves a profession that endures and stands the test of time, we should be comparing ourselves to doctors, to lawyers, who've been professions for, you know, literally millennia, right? And so there is so much potential if you think about where we are in the journey, for us to pave into new careers, into new opportunities, you know, into policy, for example, helping design the systems and solutions, that make society a better place, not just for private interest, but for public interest as well.
Well, thank you all so much for your time. I think a couple of the key takeaways to take from this is be open to opportunities. You never know when something's going to come knocking on your door, and where things are right now. Like, if you pass up on this opportunity, you don't necessarily know when the next one is going to come. So try not to hold back on those things. Networking, volunteering, mentorship, great ways to get connected and help progress your career. But I think, yeah, there are lots of new exciting areas that we can potentially move into in addition to our traditional practice areas. And so I encourage you to think of yourself as an actuary rather than a life insurance actuary or a general insurance actuary. We are all actuaries. So thank you very much. Go enjoy your lunch. And if you have questions, feel free to ask during the break.